always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine, I guess, laid back Monday afternoon by you guys. So here's the deal. I had planned on taking Friday off as a result of just, you know, long season, going to recharge the batteries, all that stuff. And when I had made that decision, I had forgotten that Odyssey was moving where we put our podcasts. You know, we moved away from Megaphone and now we're on Amperwave, Odyssey's own kind of mega, you know, their own platform. And that took place last night. So I wasn't able to record an episode yesterday, and I wouldn't have been able to post an episode yesterday. So I wound up making it kind of a longer weekend as it was. The other issue is that I have been doing, as I talked to Pete about it the other week, I've been doing a lot of work on the garage and the yard and all of that stuff. And you guys can kind of sort of hear it in my voice. Yesterday, I could barely speak. And my eyes were all bloodshot, and my nose was just leaking like a faucet. And I made the executive decision that, okay, I am going to hold off on not just posting the podcast, but you guys don't need to see me like that on the air yesterday. So made it kind of a longer weekend. I will make it up to you guys this week, as it is a Pete week. So we'll be recording an episode on Friday. And yeah, so that is kind of that stuff out of the way. A reminder, though, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please turn on those notifications, both for the show and for YouTube. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts. Also, as we move from Megaphone to Amperwave, there might be some technical difficulties on the podcast side. Please feel free to get at me either on Twitter or email or whatever to let me know, you know, if you guys are actually getting your shows all in the places that you should be, you know, because sometimes you have technical difficulties that kind of pop up and we're just here to work through them together. So today on the show, we're going to be talking about Luka finishing a distant fourth, a very distant fourth in the MVP voting. You know, I'm going to, you know, kind of reiterate some of the stuff that we have been, or that I've been talking about, as far as Luka or Lakers, you know, eligibility in the eyes of voters. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I also want to talk about the conference finals as they are now set, right? You have OKC in San Antonio in the West. You have Cleveland and New York in the East. And then, you know, fascinating, just a brutal loss last night for the Detroit Pistons in Game 7 to lose by that much at home in a Game 7. Ugly stuff there. So we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what I've kind of taken from the teams that have made it this far so far. Also give some predictions on how I see those series playing out. And then we have three questions from the iTunes mailbag. And over the course of the show, I'm sure you guys are going to have your questions as well. We're starting to, you know, maybe start to see the beginnings of the picture for what the Lakers offseason might look like. So I'm sure you guys have questions on that front as well. And yeah, we're going to go ahead and dive on in, starting with Luka finishing fourth for MVP and, you know, not receiving a single first place vote. So I'm going to try to bring this up and, you know, see what you guys think about the voting results as we see them. So you have Shea Gilgeous-Alexander wins it, and he got a bunch of the first place votes. I was actually kind of surprised how lopsided the voting here was. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander takes 83 first place votes here, and finishes with a point total across all of the votes of 939. I thought it was really weird over the course of the season that no matter what was going on with OKC's season, that his vote totals just never seemed, or his like on the prediction market and stuff like that, the odds of him winning the MVP never seemed to change. And if voters basically had their minds made up to the extent that they apparently did with these results, then, you know, I guess that's how this was always going to go. Kind of a surprise here in seeing Nikola Jokic finishing second here. He got 10 first place votes, as well as 48 second place votes. He and Victor Wembanyama really kind of split the second place votes here. Jokic got 48. Wemby got 38 or 36. Kind of hard to see from where I'm at. The people who didn't vote for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander first gave him second place votes, and that left only a single second place vote here for Luka. More on that here in a second. And then Victor Wembanyama finishes third. He got 5 first place votes. Those 38 or 36 second place votes. And then he got 47 of the third place votes, and really kind of split those, you know, almost a mirror image of the second place votes between Jokic and Wemby. Wemby finishes third with 599 overall points, and then Jokic came in with 250, significantly less than the three finalists there. And so, I mean, kind of, you know, obviously the conversation going into the voting season was how it's really weird that the Lakers just like never get finalists despite their, you know, kind of omnipresence in the NBA media landscape. Despite the fact that they have had some really good teams over the last, you know, 5 or so years, I guess 2020 happened 6 years ago. So yeah. So, you know, they won one championship. They got to a conference final, got to the second round this year. Did miss the playoffs here and there, and did have some early exits, you know, LeBron and AD kind of nursed their wounds from that bubble championship. But my running theory on you know, why it is that Lakers people, you know, whether they be eligible for Defensive Player of the Year or Coach of the Year or Executive of the Year or MVP or Sixth Man or whatever it is, the Lakers tend to be looked at from a deficit standpoint, right? What aren't they good at? When the conversation's about their place in these conversations, MVP, I'll never forget it with Kobe, where, you know, in 06, I think it was, when he averaged 35 a game, it was like, well, he didn't win enough. We've never had an MVP that far down the standings. He still made the playoffs despite having Smush Parker and Luke Walton in his starting lineup. But, you know, we just can't reward Kobe for being on a team this bad, despite him averaging 35 a game and landing on the first team All-NBA defensive team. Can't even – and I think he finished third that year. I think Dirk actually finished ahead of him in the MVP standings that year. And then when Kobe finally got to, or when the Lakers got back on their feet and it came time to, Kobe's eligibility would have been based more on wins in team wide success. And then it was like, well, no, I mean, LeBron's stats. And we were like, really, we got to look at the, and it's just like, all right, we're always going to look at it. If it's Kobe, if it's now it's Luka, previously it was LeBron, or if it was Anthony Davis, there's always a reason that we can, you know, the media or the voters can basically decide, oh, well, the focus this year is going to be on this. You know, the focus this year is going to be on that. And right now, you know, with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and with Victor Wembanyama, you would say, well, the focus was on, you know, the top two seeds, that, you know, Shai is the best player on the team that got the most wins in the West. You know, it's really just kind of that simple. That's how we always do it. And it's like, well, it's not always how you do it. Sometimes you decide to do it differently when it just happens to be a Laker who you know, would be the best player on the team that finishes, you know, high enough in the standings. And in this case, you have Luka, who, you know, and I really thought that, again, just kind of basing, you know, predicting how things were going to turn out based on how the conversation was going around, you know, the eventual results here. Luka averaged 40 points a game over the course of a month in which his team went 16-2 or whatever it was. And the predictive odds of Luka winning or being named MVP went down. And it was like, oh, okay, all right, so we know how this is going. And then, you know, and listening to some of the voters either on podcasts or in their written stuff when they're explaining their ballots and stuff, you hear a lot of people saying like, well, I mean, Luka wouldn't have qualified for these awards if not for that exception that they made for him because he was having, he left the team for the birth of his son. And it's like, okay, but he did qualify is the thing. And if you're just going to arbitrarily decide whether or not you were literally following the outlines and the rules for who gets voted for and stuff like that, then this whole exercise is fucking bullshit. Like, then all of this is meaningless. If you have every single year voters who are going to look for reasons to basically not acknowledge Lakers people or value different things depending on the kinds of seasons or the candidacy that Lakers would have, if you have people who are literally not going to obey the eligibility that the players have or that the league deems that they have and tells voters that they have, then what are we doing? You know, then honestly, what is the point of all of these awards if it's a voting base that, you know, is so clearly so clearly up in their own feelings, you know, as far as like the types of seasons that players have. Like, I'll never forget like the year that Derrick Rose won MVP over LeBron, and going into that season, it was like, yeah, LeBron's not going to win MVP this year because everybody was really angry at LeBron for going from Cleveland to Miami. And if you have these voters who were so clearly swayed by their just kind of overall mindset towards a player, or in this case, towards a team, where you have so many national media voices who over the course of the year get sick of talking about the Lakers and or spent entire years, plural, looking at the Lakers and overhyping the drama and over-examining every, you know, little thing, or being told by producers that they have to pay extra close attention to the Lakers because every segment about the Lakers tends to traffic really, really well. It was just the other day. It was before, like the morning before a game seven yesterday. And I'm scrolling through one of ESPN's like Twitter feeds or whatever, and it's Kendrick Perkins telling us that Luka Doncic is arriving at that Joel Embiid era. It's like, what? Why are we talking about Luka right now? Like, there's literally a game seven in a matter of hours. And because ESPN knows that Lakers stuff traffics, and because ESPN knows that there's going to be a bunch of Lakers shows that take umbrage with whatever it is that Kendrick Perkins' dumbass is talking about, whenever, you know, as it pertains to the Lakers, like, of course, those voters who have been told all year by their producers that you have to talk about the Lakers are going to be so sick of the Lakers that by the time it comes time to vote for anybody for any of these awards, they're going to be like, nope, I'm going to find any reason under the sun to basically say that player, that team, they aren't going to be represented here. We'll give them all NBA. We'll give them this, but here's why Victor Wembanyama is more appealing. Here's why Nikola Jokic, like, if winning mattered, then what's Jokic doing finishing second in these for MVP? You know, it just kind of is what it is. And, you know, when you look back in history and when Lakers fans specifically look back in NBA history with these awards, we can all just kind of collectively sigh and move on, understanding that a whole bunch of people whose childhoods were ruined by the Lakers are put in charge of voting for these things that sometimes would otherwise be represented by more Lakers historically. And here we stand. As far as like Luka's eligibility next year, it's going to be really interesting to see how this goes because he's going to be on a better team. The team is going to be more built, better built around him. Year two of the diet that he undertook, you know, heading into last year is going to be interesting. A lot of times those kinds of diets or body transformations really kind of take hold in the second year and only get better the longer that those habits set in. And you know, ideally, if the Lakers have a better team, they could win more games. I'm really curious what Luka's odds going into next season are going to be for MVP. And then, you know, the other funny thing too there, like even while I bring that up and as I'm kind of thinking about it out loud, starting the year is like the odds on favorite to win MVP probably seems like a bit of a disadvantage, right? Because from that point on, that's the expectation. So if you go into the season with that being the expectation and with the way that people talk about Luka, and this is before he became a Laker too, by the way, like for whatever reason with Luka, you know, analysts have always felt this freedom to, you know, call him fat and call him immature and, you know, take notice of the technical fouls and stuff like that. And look, I do think he spends too much time arguing with referees, and there were questions about his conditioning year in, year out, but also the way that, you know, people were kind of talking about him even before he became a Laker, you would never think that he had made a finals before or that he had ever had any kind of success there in Dallas. And yet he did. He did have that success there in Dallas. He did get to an NBA finals. Now, the Celtics were just clearly better, and they were a really poor matchup, though I would argue that, or I would at least point out that Luka averaged 30 points in that series, and Dallas's much bigger problem was Kyrie Irving. But for some reason, it's not talked about that way. That series is not talked about that way. So you combine kind of the way that people have always kind of talked about Luka with him arriving at the Lakers and some of the kind of national fatigue that always sets in with the Lakers. I don't know that I would ever bet or advise people to ever bet on Luka for MVP. Like, he would have to be so overwhelming a candidate, just like Kobe was the year that he finally won it, that like they would begrudgingly give it to him. And then after the fact would kind of talk about that MVP as if it was like this lifetime achievement award, when really like Kobe deserved it that year and probably the year after. And you know, we just don't quite talk about it that way. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the odds look like at the beginning of next season, obviously, depending on the summer that the Lakers have. But I do thoroughly disagree with Luka finishing that far back in the MVP voting standings. All right, so over the weekend, we also got the Oklahoma City Thunder matched up against the San Antonio Spurs. You have the Detroit Pistons, you know, pissed down their leg in game seven at home. So now you have the Cleveland Cavaliers going up against the New York Knicks, who are, you know, and you'll have the Knicks and the Thunder incredibly well rested for their matchups here. Thunder Spurs gets underway tonight. Can't wait for that game. And I was kind of thinking about, like, you know, what lessons to take from the teams that got at least this far. And you kind of look at it and you say, well, the two of the teams here, right, in the Thunder and the Cavs, made acquisitions there at the deadline, right? The Thunder picked up McCain, and the Cavs swapped Darius Garland out for James Harden. And I, you know, that would make me believe in even further that, like, you know, those teams that are willing to continue to address their roster over the course of the season do put themselves in a good spot there. You have a team in New York who, while they might not have made an acquisition there at the deadline, despite, you know, advancing as far as they had the year prior, the Knicks didn't sit on their hands. They swapped out a coach in Tom Thibodeau for Mike Brown. And they, over the course of the season, also acknowledged that they can't play quite so much Jalen Brunson ball and kind of leaned into some creation at the high post or through Karl Anthony Towns. And I think that gave themselves another dimension to their offense that they could use as a counterpunch. And so, like, strategically, I really like that the New York Knicks, you know, kind of made themselves less one-dimensional over the course of the season. And I think that put themselves into a good spot here. And then, you know, with the San Antonio Spurs, you have a team that's, you know, young, and they are going as their young superstar in Victor Wembanyama goes. And they chose not to you know, do much with their roster at the deadline, but they did, you know, in the year prior, bring in De'Aaron Fox to maybe, you know, hasten that team's development. And they stuck with Mitch Johnson as their head coach, but they also still have Greg Popovich kind of apparently helping with game plans here in the postseason. So you kind of have the best of both worlds, where you have this young up-and-coming coach who maybe thinks of the game slightly, you know, in a little more futuristic way. But then you also have somebody like Greg Popovich and his insane amount of experience. And because you promoted a candidate from within your organization, that candidate or that new coach, Mitch Johnson, it can work that much better with Greg Popovich, and you can, you know, kind of reap those rewards of Pop's experience too. So kind of interesting dynamic there. I guess, like, my overall kind of takeaway here is, those teams that are still alive right now in these playoffs, they have committed to an identity. They have, you know, supplemented that identity. The way that they go about, like, you know, winning and sacrificing and all of that stuff, like, that is, those are widely held beliefs throughout the organization. And every single player, basically, and every coach and every executive within those walls of the Thunder, of the Knicks, of the Thunder and the Spurs and the Cavs or whatever, like, all of those voices and all of those people, you know, are all rowing very much in the exact same direction. And that doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, conversations that at times might ruffle feathers, or that doesn't mean that everybody is just kumbaya at all times. But I do think it does lead to when I look at those teams that are still playing, you know, at this stage of the season, I look at cultures that, you know, I wish could be extended here to the Lakers. So it's going to be interesting to see how these things play out. My predictions: I have the Thunder winning their series in six, And then I have the Knicks beating the Cavs in six as well. And then, you know, and it's, I think the Thunder are incredibly well rested. They get Jalen, they get J-Dub back for their series here against the Spurs. They've been here before. That experience is really going to help them. That front line is as equipped to deal with Victor Wembanyama as any in the sport. Now that said, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the San Antonio Spurs upset the Thunder. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if the San Antonio team that at one point beat the Thunder like three straight times this season. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we looked up and they were representing the West in the NBA Finals. And for Cavs, Knicks, like, I think that the Knicks depth at the wing spots defensively is going to provide issues for the Cavs defensively, right? So you have, you know, you have Mikal Bridges, you have Josh Hart, you have OG Anunoby, and you have they also picked up Jose Alvarado in the you know, at the deadline as well. And you know, his ability to defend Donovan Mitchell is going to be interesting to watch in that series. And then for Cleveland, you know, and actually, you know, really quickly, you know, kind of looking at like team building and stuff like that. The other thing too is like the Lakers have basically tried operating below the first apron, basically since the CBA moved into this apron world. And I do think that, like, you know, while the Cavs are heading towards a really tricky offseason, it's worth it now to them, right? They got to the conference finals. If they can advance to the finals, let alone if they could win a championship or whatever, operating at near or above the second apron when you are within your window, like that, yes, eventually that bill comes due. And yes, eventually they're going to have some, they're going to have to make some tricky decisions. That's the case for every team operating at every level of this CBA, no matter which cap it is that you try to work under. And so for the Cavs and for the Knicks, you know, and you know, they've basically just said, you know what, this is our window. We're going to go for it. We're going to keep adding to our roster. We're going to keep turning in chips, and we're going to keep pushing chips into the middle of the table. And they now advance into the conference finals, and both the Knicks and the Cavs have really good chances, I think, at advancing all the way to the actual NBA finals. And I like, that's going to be something that, you know, while Luka is in his prime, I'm going to be paying a lot close attention to is all right, Lakers, this era of, you know, building towards optionality, that is something that, you know, led to some pretty mediocre teams. Now is the time to start cashing in chips. Now is the time to start, you know, seeing optionality as the tool that it is, not the goal that it had been. And I think here with what the Lakers are looking towards this summer, and then, you know, continuing to build towards after this summer, it is time to start, you know, maybe not looking at the first apron as your cap, but all, you know, being willing to go right up to that second apron eventually as you continue to add to your roster. No more letting the Maxi Klebas of the world expire for nothing. No more letting the Malik Beasleys and the Mo Bambas of the world expire for nothing. When you have an expiring contract, while you have a player of Luka Doncic's ilk, you know, those expiring contracts that you have and whatever draft capital that you have, it is now time to use that stuff to add to your roster after you see what kind of flexibility that having cap space gets you this year. But yeah, those Cavs that matchup between the Cavs and the Knicks is going to be a fascinating one. I have the Knicks just slightly ahead because I like the more physical team between the two of them. But that said, if you would ask me who would be the more physically daunting team between the Cavs and the Raptors, or the Cavs and the Pistons, I would have said the other two teams, you know, pretty well overwhelmingly. But the Cavs have done a pretty damn good job of being their own kind of physical, good counterpunch team, timely shooting with Sam Merrill, and Max Strus has been really good in these in this playoff run too. And then you have, you know, James Harden, you know, really kind of wet the bed in game seven, but you had Donovan Mitchell step up instead. So, and I think there have been moments where James Harden has been, you know, quite good, and Donovan Mitchell, you know, needed to be picked up. So, I like that, you know, Cleveland has a nice diverse attack that they can offer against the Knicks, but the Knicks also have a very diverse attack that they can present. The Cavs, it wouldn't surprise me to see that thing go six or seven, and whoever comes out of it, I think is going to lose to whatever team comes out of the West. But that, you know, Cavs Knicks should be a really fun series. All right, let's go ahead and dive on into the comments that we've gotten over the course of the show. And then we have three questions here from the iTunes mailbag. First one comes from QBreezy12, who writes, anybody from the Thunder you want as realistic potential poach in the offseason? Hartenstein, Caruso, Kayson Wallace, anybody else? So I don't think Kayson Wallace is going anywhere. I think he's about to be a restricted free agent. So, like, I hope somebody makes like a max offer that OKC would have to match. But, you know, eventually whenever we arrive then, but I don't think Kayson Wallace is going anywhere. But as far as like the other guys there, this is kind of interesting. Hartenstein would be at the top of my list. If the Lakers could somehow, some way get Hartenstein and he becomes your anchor defensively and your lob threat and your pinch post fulcrum of the offense as well, like, that would be ideal. The thing that I keep on running into, though, in all of these, and then from there, like, you know, Lu Dort also comes to mind, although I would have to delete so many Lu Dort tweets. And then from there, you know, like Aaron Wiggins is kind of interesting. Isaiah Joe is somewhat interesting. Obviously Alex Caruso would be a really fun addition for a variety of reasons. But the thing that I keep on asking myself, and this is a question that's going to come up a bunch over the course of the summer before we finally get to the summer. But like, if I'm Sam Presti, or if I'm the Denver Nuggets, or if I'm like any of these teams, especially in the West, that are up against it cap wise, yes, I make life easier on myself by opening, you know, sending players to the Lakers and opening up my books so that I can still afford to pay, you know, other key figures on the team. But like, do I really want to help make the Lakers better? Like, is there any other pathway? And if there is any other pathway to that financial flexibility, does it make more sense to go and call up Brooklyn or call up any, you know, any other team, Chicago? And I think Atlanta has a little bit of cap space this year. Does it make any sense whatsoever to make it work with another team that doesn't involve making the Lakers specifically better and the Luka Doncic Lakers team better? Like, wouldn't I just head down that path anyway, right? Like, part of the reason that Brooklyn keeps on getting to rent out their cap space is because nobody is really all that worried about Brooklyn ever turning that corner. Whereas like with the Lakers, I do think that like, if you send one too many helpful players, now all of a sudden you have to now deal with the Lakers in the playoffs with some of your better players or some of your useful players that are now on their books that you just sent over there for very little just to open up your books. And I just, that doesn't seem like something that Sam Presti would want to do. I could maybe see Denver being desperate enough because their books are that brutal. But like, would that organization of all organizations want to make the, like, I saw that Aaron Gordon was a name that is on the Lakers list the other day, or I heard that. And it's like, the Denver Nuggets are going to send Mr. Nugget to the Lakers. I'm not even sure I'm interested in him because I don't know that he has one working hamstring on his body, but like, they would choose to do that. Would they choose to send Cam Johnson to the Lakers? Would they choose to send, Christian Brown to the Lakers, you know, knowing that those guys would really help right away? I don't know. I sincerely don't know. And usually if I don't know something like that, then usually it's a response that I wouldn't be too thrilled about. So yeah, I would love to see the Lakers poach, not just players, by the way. I would love to see the Lakers poach front office personnel from the Thunder as well. But and development people from the Thunder. Good God, the bang for their buck that they get on all of their prospects. The Lakers need to poach some of their player development coaches. But yeah, like the any of those guys, I would be interested in, but I would start my search, or I would start, you know, with our Isaiah Hartenstein right up at the top of the guys that I really, really, really want to see on the Lakers next year. All right. So the next question that we have here from Ricky Spanish Jr. Appreciate your work and respect for your growth as a journalist. Thank you. There are people who are watching the show right now rolling their eyes at me being considered a journalist. And to those people, I would say, you're right. What do you think about a De'Aaron Fox for Austin Reeves sign and trade? Shooting downgrade, but major defensive and athleticism upgrade. Not in love with Fox's contract, but think I'd rather pay him that kind of money opposed to Reeves. Thoughts? Well, Fox's contract is brutal. So I don't think it's a very, like, I don't think that is an either or type of situation that I would be like thrilled about. The other thing too, like, as far as like the Fox Reeves thing, I think you're swapping out one set of issues for another set of issues. I don't think either team get much better that way. And I think the Lakers just get more expensive. So I wouldn't be all that interested. As far as Reeves in general, though, I think this needs to be said and repeated ad nauseum. I don't think Austin is going anywhere. The Lakers love him. He is one of the bigger organizational wins that Rob Pelinka has had. Austin really wants to be a Laker moving forward. And probably most importantly, Luka Doncic wants Austin to be a Laker with him for the foreseeable future. There was that report from, I believe, The Athletic that, you know, Luka had told the front office that he didn't want Austin traded for Giannis. I don't think he would want, like, I saw that there's that, you know, there's a conversation about, well, what if you do Reeves for Durin, or in this case, Reeves for Fox, or I've seen Reeves for Kessler, and I've seen Reeves for any number of players, right? And look, if Luka had gone to the, or has already gone to the front office and said, yeah, I don't want Austin traded for Giannis, I definitely don't think he's going to be like, oh, well, actually, De'Aaron Fox makes some sense, right? Like, if he didn't want Austin included in a Giannis trade, I don't think he like watched that series. Well, I don't think he watched that series, but I definitely don't think he watched Cavs Pistons and walked away from it being like, yeah, I know I didn't want Austin in the Giannis trade, but man, Durin, though, after that series, that makes some sense. I just don't see that. Look, whether you agree or you disagree or whatever, Austin's teammates freaking love him. He's a fiery competitor. He's gotten better every single year that he has been in the league. He could have easily just sat out against the Thunder and maybe even like maintained a higher standing with, you know, the negotiations, right? He put that at risk by playing hurt because nobody seems to give players any kind of leeway when it comes to their performance dipping potentially because of injury or the return from injury. Instead, he fought scratch and clawed to be able to make himself available in that series. And I thought over the course of the series got better. So all of that is to say, no matter how you might feel about Austin Reeves, we know how the Lakers feel about him. Go back and watch Rob Pelinka in that presser when he's talking about Austin. And remember, it was a two-part question, right? They were asking about LeBron's free agency and what they're doing there. And then as part of that conversation, Reeves also came up. And remember, Pelinka was just kind of like, you know, look, we want to honor LeBron's, you know, we want to honor him by giving him as much time as he can. And I or any team would love to have LeBron on it and blah, 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 blah. You know, you could literally see him just repeating the boilerplate answers, you know, from there. But then, like, you know, when the conversation turned to Austin, you could literally see him start to glow thinking about it. And so does that mean that I think the Lakers are going to just completely supermax this guy? No, I don't see that necessarily happening. Austin has also said that he doesn't need to be completely maxed out contractually if, you know, not happening would maybe help the Lakers accumulate talent around him or assemble talent around him and Luka. But one thing is for sure. Luka wants him there, and we know how Rob, you know, kind of works with stars and likes to give himself that kind of organizational protection by doing what his stars ask him to do. And in this case, the star is asking him to do something in keeping Reeves that Rob would probably really like to do anyway. So I don't think there's a world where Austin isn't on the Lakers next year. And I for damn sure, like if Luka didn't want Austin in Giannis trades, then I for damn sure don't think Austin is going to be traded for Jalen Duren or for De'Aaron Fox or for players that are significantly worse at basketball than Giannis. I actually think if Giannis is a Laker, the Lakers would probably fight tooth and nail to keep Austin out of that deal and might still have a decent chance at acquiring Giannis, even if that is how things play out where Austin isn't included in a Giannis trade. I think the Lakers are weirdly confident that they would be able to get Giannis with or without Reeves. Viva Exceptionalism writes, Anthony, I don't normally submit two of these in a week, but I just read Edwin Garcia's article that Austin is expected to get a $40 million contract. If that happens right off, right off the Lakers championship chances for the next 5 years. He's not a number two on a championship team. He's a good player, but has clear defensive deficiencies. He's not a good catch and shoot 3-point shooter and has been at best uneven in the playoffs. If you invest number two money in a number three or number four player, you're dead in the water. What do you think? I don't think that is that ridiculous a stance to take. I think if you give Austin that kind of money, you're hoping that the cap jumps at some point and that contract isn't as tough. I would like, if you're going to give Austin $40 million, I would like to see his, you know, average annual salary or whatever actually descend across that contract. So if he starts next year at like 40, then you jump down to like 38.5 and then 37 and then, you know, 35.5 or something like that. You know, I would like to see Over the course of that contract, it become maybe more movable potentially. I think if you do that, then it becomes absolutely critical that you bring in an anchor defensively, who dissuades teams from attacking the rim. I think it becomes absolutely critical that you have like several defensive presences on the perimeter who can guard different types of attackers, right? Like the Lakers were actually well equipped to guard like wing attackers, but they have completely lacked as far as like point of attack shifty defenders. And that's something that you would need to bring in as well for a Luka Austin backcourt moving forward. Look, I also think it's worth pointing this out. No matter what number Austin is at after this year and moving forward, if it's $1 more than he made this year, then inherently speaking, it is that much trickier to build a roster around him and Luka. And the reason that I say that is because this is something that all teams are dealing with. This is something that like all every team in the league, the Thunder are looking at this situation. The Nuggets are faced immediately with this situation. The Cavs, as we've talked about, have their own cap concerns. Like the longer that these cores are together, the more difficult it is to keep them together and continue to compete. And this is like one of the things that I really kind of hate about the Adam Silver era is he's already made it so that free agency isn't really a route that teams can go towards in building out their rosters. Trades have become that much trickier because nobody knows in any given year how much a pick is worth. Now he's trying to make it more difficult for teams to tank, as their team building exercise or primary team building approach. Just over time, we've seen this league just make it more and more and more complicated to acquire talent. And so like what that means is if you have talent on your roster, then that means you have to like pay up to keep it and also give yourself whatever flexibility you can otherwise to build around that talent. And I think Austin right now, yes, there are questions about him, but there are questions about all of these guys. Like it's like we talked about at the beginning of the show. We always talk about Lakers from this deficit model and with this deficit approach where we look at Austin and we say, well, he's not an athlete. Okay. But he gets downhill and he gets to the rim regardless whether or not he's an athlete, whether or not he's, you know, one of the Thompson brothers. And yet we watch those Thompson brothers and both one guy got eliminated in the first round and the other guy got eliminated in embarrassing fashion in a game 7 in the second round. And it's like, those guys are super athletic. Are they better basketball players right now than Austin? Probably not, you know, like in aggregate. Like we can do this thing and we've been doing it with like Rui, for example, where Rui is not the rebounder that I wish he was. Rui is not the defender that I wish he was. Rui doesn't make decisions as quickly as I would like him to. But also, Rui has gotten better in the postseason every year that we've seen him in that spot. And also, Rui has turned himself into one of the best shooters in the sport right now. But for some reason, we always seem to focus on the things that Rui isn't very good at. And this is where with Austin, yeah, I would love to see Austin become a better shooter. It's really weird to me that he isn't a very good catch-and-shoot player. He has good... his shot is clean enough that you would think it would go in more frequently than it does, but it doesn't. And I just think that like I'm not disagreeing that Austin isn't a perfect player, but that's why like his max tops out in the 40s, not the 50s or 60s, you know, or the 70s as it will eventually for some of these guys. Like when we talk about Austin's max deal, I know that max is a word that kind of like scares people off, but Austin's max is significantly lower than other players' maxes. And yet we talk about like the only players who should get their max is, you know, are these perfect players? Well, yeah, sure. If everybody's max was the same, I would agree. But everybody's max isn't the same. And there are teams willing to pay Austin the most that they could possibly pay him. And so long as that remains the case, and unless you're willing to let Austin just walk for nothing, then this conversation has to be a lot more complicated than, well, if the Lakers pay him that, then go ahead and kiss goodbye any chance that they have it winning a championship. I just don't think that that's how we can look at these things. All right. So all right. So I see the people here. The Thompson brothers just came to mind. Let's see. Let's do this. De'Aaron Fox age. De'Aaron Fox is 28 years old. Okay. Now let's do De'Aaron Fox contract. Austin is 27-28 too, right? So De'Aaron Fox signed a four-year $221 million deal. Fox, over the next 4 years, is going to get paid $49.5 million, $53.5 million, $57.4 million, and $61.3 million, almost $4 million over the course of his extension here, okay? And that's just, it's an estimate right now because those numbers are going to depend on where the cap resides when that extension kicks in. Would you rather have De'Aaron Fox, who is the, like, by the time he gets to being paid $61.4 million or whatever it is in his age 32 season, would you rather have De'Aaron Fox at $61.4 million or Austin on a contract that would have declined to that point at almost, you know, in like the 30s? You know, like, here's the thing. No matter what team you're building here, you're going to have guys who like eventually get paid. Either that, or you have to be willing to trust a Lakers draft team that hasn't found a good prospect in multiple years. I don't care what you think about Adu Thiro. He didn't do jack shit in his rookie season. Like, you have to trust a Lakers front office to navigate the draft and keep on, you know, resupplying the team with enough talent that you can just let an Austin Reeves walk, or you can let a Rui Hachimura walk, or you can let a LeBron James walk. Like, the number of times that people, like, because the Lakers lost a series and people are just like, oh, fuck them. Get everybody out of here. It's like, okay, that's fine. But like, eventually you do have to like build a culture, and Austin is a really important part of this team's culture. The fact that he and Luka get along to the extent that they do makes me think that like that's a decent starting point for a real culture. And like, yeah, the Thompson brothers aren't the perfect comp because they're so much younger, but I don't know, man, like, all of these really, really young guys, eventually they're going to have to get paid too. And like, Amen Thompson or Sar Thompson at like, you know, I think they're both up for, they're both eligible for some of their rookie max extensions here coming up. And both of those guys are going to be paid in the 40s. And they're roughly, I would say, the same player as Austin is. I don't care how young they are. I don't care how old Austin is compared to them. If I'm trying to win a basketball game next season, which guy would I rather have at roughly the same number? I don't think it's much of a debate, to be completely honest. So, like, again, we're going to look at, we're going to have all these conversations about, and we're going to start, you know, the player review series here pretty soon. But we're going to have all these conversations about all of these guys. And for whatever reason with the Lakers, we always talk about guys as who they aren't. Austin isn't athletic. Okay. Austin isn't a knockdown shooter. Okay. Austin isn't a great defender. Okay. But he was, despite not being all of those things, he would have been an all-star this year had he stayed healthy. Hell, he probably would have been an all-NBA player this year had he stayed healthy. The Lakers were pretty damn good with Austin in the lineup through March. And again, like, looked pretty out of sorts when Austin wasn't on the court as that series went on against OKC. So, like, I don't know. There's no, like, perfect player here. Unless you can, you know, turn off trades and turn off the salary cap and make the Lakers the Dodgers, and then they could just pay every great player exactly what they should. No, like, that's not how this is going to work. Eventually, you have to find some give and takes here. You're going to have to, you know, if you're going to have a backcourt of Luka and Austin, then you need to resupplement the holes in their game with other players on this team. And that's the goal of all of this. But you can't just let players walk because they aren't the exact player that you want them to be, you know, and that's often how I see, you know, these again, like, Richard Case, overpaid vets are bad. Yes. Unproven young guys who are cheaper doesn't get you any closer to, like, a championship. Like, Detroit's books look pretty damn clean. They're the number one seed. They're at home. Like, go through Minnesota's. No, Minnesota's not. Houston has all kinds of cheap young talent on their team. Lakers kicked their ass. You know, like, I would love to be able to assemble a young team with all of the best contracts to be able to. But even if you do assemble one of those teams that are super young and super cheap, and they're all on their rookie contracts and all of that stuff. And then, you know, you go into that season, and if you don't win that season, eventually you're going to have to pay all of those guys. So you're letting those players walk too, and then you're hoping to to redraft and have those. Like, it's just, eventually you have to pay people, and you have to hope that you pay the right people, not just from a talent standpoint, but also from, like, a human being standpoint. Do you want Austin Reeves, the human being, in your organization? I would argue you do. And we'll see what the books look like after this year. But the number of times that I get questions and comments about, like, oh, just get Austin out of here, get so-and-so out of here, eventually you're going to have a team, or the people who think that way, you're going to have a lottery team year in, year out, with players who you're hoping turn into the perfect player, apparently. And meanwhile, the rest of the league around you is going to be thrilled with how you're operating, because you're going to keep letting talent walk out the doors for nothing. Like, eventually you have to start building something. And that's what the Lakers are going to be looking to do this summer. And it's funny too, because, like, now I'm going to be labeled as, oh, I'm a Austin stan, or I'm this stan. I'm just calling it like I see it. And I'm looking out at the landscape of the other players who are available as free agents, unrestricted free agents. And it's not very much. And all right, now you're starting to, you know, you say, all right, we'll use the cap space to be able to bring players in who other teams are looking to get rid of because they are up against the whatever apron. And it's like, okay, that's also fine. But if a team is willing to part with a player to save some money, then that player isn't going to be that important to whether or not they win or not. And therefore might not be that much better than the player that you could just retain, you know? And I'm not saying that the Lakers need to run it back. I definitely am not saying that. I think Jared Vanderbilt needs to go. I think Dalton Connect needs to go. I think the Lakers need to use some of their draft capital to bring in some more win now guys. I think you need a real upgrade at the center spot. And I think that you need to bring in a starter who pushes Marcus Smart down to more of a bench player who you don't rely on for 30 minutes or so a night. I'm not at all saying that all of the Lakers need to be back next year, but I also think we have to be a lot smarter about this stuff than that player isn't perfect. Get him out of here. That player isn't so-and-so. Get him out of here. I'm not going to agree with that personally. Now we'll see what the offseason brings, and we'll see, you know, who is available in trades and all of that stuff. And as we, you know, kind of close out the conference and the NBA finals, we'll start to get a clear picture of that. But as it stands right now, I just think people are kind of jumping way too quickly to the conclusion that, like, all right, because the Lakers didn't get out of the second round this year with a team that was very clearly a stopgap, that every single player on that team, not named Luka, needs to go. I just think that doesn't have that approach lacks the kind of nuance that this offseason is going to require. All right. I am going to go ahead and get out of here while I still have a voice. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And thank you to... Well, let me make sure I didn't get any super comments before we... Of course, I'm fine. Tax the profit. Like, of course, I'm fine with trading Jake LaRavia. What are we doing? All right. I'm getting frustrated. My voice hurts. And you guys... like. I love you guys. I really, really, really do. And I'm really thankful for the support that you've given the channel and the show and the lounge and all this stuff in the community. I really appreciate it. But I really wish that we were smarter about like the outlook that we have on the players that the Lakers either currently employ or would be looking to, replace. And, you know, that would involve something more than, oh, that dude's ass, get him out of here. Oh, that dude's ass, get him out of here. Like, imagine if that was the pod. Now, that would be a funny pod, right? Like, maybe I'll just do a bunch of YouTube shorts or TikToks or whatever. It's like, all right. Austin Reeves player review. That dude's ass, get him out of here. All right, next one. LeBron James player review. That dude's old, get him out of here. that's how my comment, my chat section appears to look at all times. It's like, that dude sucks. And now it's my turn to have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. And until the next time you guys hear from me, which will be tomorrow with Harrison, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you then.